We've got Gene Boldick in the studio, the host of the Weekend Water Cooler, and it is time for Thing Not a Thing, the game in which Gene and I take a look at all the things that have people upset on social media this week, and we decide, are they things or are they not things? And this is week number two of the only thing that people are talking about is Ukraine, well, China now, apparently, impeachment inquiries or the technical lack thereof, and are they actually going to start one or just saying, are they going to start one? And we agreed last week that the whole thing is a thing.
That's obviously a giant thing.
So how do we make this interesting?
Well, here's one observation I'll just make as a PS to last week, which is I think that your insight about Don Imus is the single smartest thing I've heard said about this, and I watch entirely too much coverage of
it.
In the last week, because everything I've seen since then has completely validated that, including every word that has spewed out of the president's mouth, where he stood up there and said, oh, yeah, of course we should, you know, and he's just acting like, what is everybody's problem? I've been doing this all along.
Yep.
Well, you know, he's standing on tectonic plates, and he doesn't know it.
Yeah. He's also right. He has been doing this all along.
Yeah. And I think that the next thing to be realized is the gobsmacking incompetence at high levels of his government that is being revealed by all of this. Oh, we're gonna put together a statement for our hostage, the president of the Ukraine, to read in public, to say that he's going to open an investigation so that he can get this money that he needs. And we're doing this just to pacify the president and Rudy Giuliani. This is a solution that they come up with. That's ludicrous. I mean, it's things like that. And it's things like hiding documents on a code name only server and these ridiculous cover up attempts that were never going to work. They had to know that was never going to work. It's an amazing display of, you know, it almost makes you respect Nixon because at least they were somewhat clever.
I have a hard time predicting what's going to happen or even like really following this. The nice thing about having a show that focuses on local news is I can just let CBS News cover it at the top of the hour. I'm like, no, I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of heartburn, I think, at the networks.
So, yeah.
But here's my thing for this week, which will really surprise you. Here's my thing. A couple of years ago, several years ago, Carrie Fisher did an HBO special called Wishful Drinking.
I was not expecting you to start there. Yeah.
And
this is why I can't predict things. Like, the weather is bad enough.
And you said, wow, right from that to Carrie Fisher.
I don't know where the conversation is going to go 5 seconds from now, and I'm in it.
In her program, which is really wonderful, and if you haven't seen it, you can probably find it on YouTube at this point. She talked about the fact that many years after Star Wars, she discovered that there was all this merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Carrie Fisher action doll, well, a Princess Leia action doll.
Right.
And there was this and that and the other thing. And her favorite thing, by the way, was a shampoo bottle where you took Carrie Fisher's head and screwed off her head to pour out the shampoo.
Of course.
And she said, you know, I didn't get a penny from any of that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'll bet you that stuff made a lot more money than the movies did. Okay.
At least it was up there,
it's probably close,
yeah.
Right?
It's a whole scene in Spaceballs about
many,
it.
Many, many subsequent fortunes were made, and they were all made, she said, by George Lucas, who owned her likeness. And so she said, you know, when I really arrived in this world of celebrity and really came to understand that I was truly, truly famous, yes, when I found out that I was a Pez dispenser, that's when I really made the connection that even as I am a Pez dispenser, George Lucas owns me. And I always think of that when I consider the issue of the athletes getting paid for their use of their likenesses. And whether or not he's putting it that way, I think that's what Coach Williams is pointing out as well.
Yes.
That, you know, if you're a Pez dispenser and you look just like Zion Williams or Michael Jordan or any famous UNC player, you know, that player may not have come up with the idea, but it's really not cool that they don't get a penny from it.
One of the things that I think is just a good thing to keep in mind whenever you're listening to people debating any political issue at all is that the vast majority of the arguments that people make, and it doesn't matter if it's whether it's someone you disagree with or someone you agree with, someone you think is completely off the rails or something you think everything they say is 100% true, it's true of everyone. At least 90% of the arguments that we make to justify the positions that we hold, we don't actually believe those arguments. We believe the position that we hold,
right.
And then
and
we're
those
just
arguments fit.
Inventing rationalizations
right.
to justify. And occasionally I notice that more with certain issues and certain positions than
right.
others. I think,
right.
you know, everyone's inclined to be more aware of that when they're listening to people making arguments that they disagree with versus
right.
arguments that they agree with.
Sure.
On this particular issue, I really notice that when it comes to that question of should players
right.
be paid, because I really think that the vast majority of the arguments made against it and they're made very strongly and sincerely by people who really legitimately hold this position that athletes shouldn't be paid. But I don't think the arguments hold water. They really don't.
They really don't, because they don't understand, I think, the detail. And I think Coach Williams explained this very well about meals and,
right.
you know, and when you really get into the minutia, all of which is in somebody's contract somewhere, and it was in Carrie Fisher's contract, she said, you know, I didn't know I was signing all that away.
Yeah.
I would never have done that. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
But, you know, her explanation was she was about 20 years old, and what did she know? And they said, you're going to be in a movie. Here, sign.
Exactly.
But, you know, these athletes, I don't expect a kid who's signing up to play a varsity sport to be thinking about the many and sundry ways that their likeness could be exploited for money.
Yeah.
And I think that somebody who's sufficiently expert in this should be looking out for their interests.
And I actually think the thing that they're doing in California, and I haven't really been following it that closely because,
right.
again, local news,
but from
what I understand, what they're doing in California, I think is a really good middle ground so as to, you know, not end in the legitimately kind of sketchy situations where you've got athletic departments that are paying athletes differently based on the amount of revenue that they're bringing
right.
in and
right.
focusing on the big money sports versus others. But they are giving players an opportunity to make some money off of their likenesses by signing endorsement deals, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I think that's fine. Like if you're 19 years old and Nike wants you to be their spokesperson for whatever reason, sure, I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah,
it's not going
to
influence my decision to buy shirts.
I agree, and I still feel that, and I feel this way about the NFL too, that that it's incumbent upon the university, just like it is upon the NFL, to make sure that players have sufficient representation to protect their interests. They're supposed to be expert at catching a ball, shooting a ball, or running with a ball, or doing whatever their sport requires. And when you're talking about young people, it's almost like in loco parentis responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little paternalistic, but you know what? When you're cultivating great athletes, you're not emphasizing that they need to understand about termination clauses and contracts, and you know, you need to tell them you need to get a good lawyer and have it be someone you can trust.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think they ought to have lawyers available. They should have an Angie's List of sports lawyers who are recognized as being excellent representatives for their clients.
I bet that list exists, and we're just not running in the circles that are aware of it.
You don't think you and I run in those circles?
When I was a big-time, big-money college athlete, it was just so far back in the day.
That's true. Well, you know, when I was, I was in journalism school when the first contracts with Nike were being discussed for UNC. And what I remember is that there was a more than a little bit of controversy about it. A lot of people were upset about it. But then somebody in one of my journalism classes, like, you know, news writing, I mean, it was one of the very basic classes, said, yeah, well, look, I'm on the archery team,
mm-hmm.
okay? nobody's breaking into ESPN about our sport. But because Coach Smith signed that contract, we got a bunch of equipment from Nike and a whole bunch of second and third tier teams at UNC got that because Coach Smith signed that contract. So some of that's just about the ethics of Coach Smith, and some of it's about, well, yeah, that's what this is all about. It's all about using this to help pay for that and subsidizing
big
it.
Big money has just infiltrated college athletics to a really, really insidious way, but you can use that for good as well as.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's
and
a,
by the way, you know,
street.
Since you mentioned this about big money and athletes on another interview on your program, I thought a lot about Rutgers and its football team. And every time I'm cruising around looking at college football on Saturdays, I'm going,
what did they lose 52 to nothing last week, something like that?
I think they did. I didn't want to go there, but yeah, I think they did.
I remember being at, when I was at Rutgers, we went to a game, and this was a little bit reminiscent of the Carolina-Clemson game last weekend, except with a slightly different outcome. We were playing Miami, and this was back when Miami was number one.
Is that what you mean?
No, we definitely lost, but we were in it through the third quarter. We went into the fourth quarter. I think Rutgers actually might have been ahead going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And then Miami just scored four touchdowns in a row and it ended up being a big blowout. But we walked out of that stadium thrilled and elated because we had hung with Miami for 45 minutes and we only lost by 3.5 touchdowns.
Exactly. Yeah, 3.5 touchdowns.
That is Rutgers
about your perspective, right? I mean, if Harvard had gone up against Clemson and come out with that outcome, they would feel the same way. And I saw a lot of junk online, I'm sure you did too, about, oh, you know, Mac, he should have gone for the tie and gone for overtime. And
no.
I thought, no, you know, he makes a decision that he could have had 100 things in his mind, including how tired the defense was and whatever. And, you know, you're in it until the last second. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
That was a great
game. You go for two.
We were going to get
totally
blown out by four touchdowns, and we lost by one.
Who's on the water cooler this weekend?
You know, that's a great question, and I can't wait to find out, because I actually literally do not know.
It's going
to
be a re-air of a previous episode,
it is,
right?
And I got an email from Nikki this morning, and that actually didn't say.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But
we'll be back soon with new programs,
I promise.
It
is going to be on this Sunday, 1 o'clock and 8 o'clock, Saturday at 4 a.m. if you're up late, and get
the full
archive at weekendwatercooler.com. Gene Boldick, thank you so much.
Stay cool.